It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
The days are getting shorter, but the lights couldn't be brighter. This time of year, baseball is different, and the whole world is watching. All of the clutch hits, the game-saving grabs, the plays at the plate, and the head-first slides under the tag. That's peak baseball. Experience all of the autumn action. It's postseason season. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
It's a very special morning edition of Rico Bronya. The New York Mets wrap up their road trip with a loss to the Pittsburgh Pirates, and they begin what is undoubtedly a very important six-game homestand before the All-Star break against Washington and against Colorado. We'll go through what happened on Monday afternoon. I know that's pissed a lot of people off. It's pissed me off. We'll preview this homestand, and we'll read a lot of your emails. The reason this is happening on a Tuesday morning is, I got to tell you, when I got back from work on Monday night, I was zonked. I was exhausted. And I said to the Hoff, there's no way. I won't even be able to put sentences together. I'll sound like the president. So I went to sleep. So we are recording this on a beautiful Tuesday morning, less than 24 hours after the Mets lost to the Pittsburgh Pirates. All right, so let's get right into this game, and then we can move on. I understand protecting young arms. I understand that you need to be careful with young arms. Christian Scott even had an injury scare a year ago in which the Mets thought he was going to need Tommy John surgery. So I am not telling you that the Mets should be irresponsible in the handling of Christian Scott. But what you should do, if you're an organization that's going to take this kind of stuff very seriously, is you should plan things out. And what I mean by that is, if you're afraid of Christian Scott throwing more than 75 pitches because he's pitching on regular rest, and then he's going to make another start on regular rest, I got this novel idea. Don't pitch him on regular rest. That's option number one. Option number one would be to reconfigure your roster a little bit. Maybe Jose Budo's in the rotation. Maybe you recall Joey Lucchesi. Maybe you never sent down Tyler McGill. There are options that would have allowed Christian Scott to just pitch on a sixth day instead of a fifth day. I'm not telling you that's what I would do. I'm saying these are the options so you could avoid the mess that was on Monday afternoon. Because under no circumstances, when you have a bullpen that's not good to begin with, a bullpen that is completely shorthanded because Nunez isn't available, Garrett isn't available, Diaz isn't available, you cannot put yourself in a situation in which you take a starting pitcher out who's retired, what was it, 9 in a row after the O'Neill Cruz home run? He had not allowed a base runner after that O'Neill Cruz 2-run home run. He is cruising. His pitch count is more than reasonable. There are two outs and nobody on. And oh, by the way, like I said, you have a short-handed bullpen. Even a full bullpen would have caused us panic. But you have a shorthanded bullpen, and you cannot manage yourself. And I say this as an organization, not just Carlos Mendoza. Since this was an organizational decision, okay, let's talk about the organization. You can't put yourself in that spot. So one option I already laid out was don't pitch Christian Scott on a fifth day. Which, if you listen to the Rico, I actually thought was going to happen 5 days ago. I remember saying, I assume Christian Scott will get pushed back to Tuesday because he's not going to pitch on regular rest. So even I'm under the assumption they're not going to force him to pitch on regular rest, considering how they're babying him. And maybe babying isn't the right term, handling him with care. But if you're going to pitch him on regular rest, if that's what you're going to do, then let's go back to July 3rd. Let's go back to his last start. And let's try to figure out how the Mets, who were handling Scott with such care in AAA, where he would never throw more than 80 pitches, you're now allowing him to throw 99 pitches and even be in that spot where he gave up the three-run home run to make it 5-4, which I was questioning last week. And the reason I questioned it was you're asking this kid to do something he hasn't done because you've handled him with such care. And now you, after pushing him 5 days earlier, are going to use that as the reason why you took him out on Monday? It just doesn't add up. It's not good, and I'm going to say managing, but it's not good organizing from the manager and from the front office. I got to be honest with you. So I'm not just screaming into the clouds about Christian Scott being pulled with a low pitch count on a Monday afternoon after he had retired a bunch of guys in a row. Yeah, that on its own is bad. But to me, what makes it worse is combining everything. I think back to Matt Harvey in 2015. What really annoyed me about the rumors and the innuendo and the discussion about Matt being shut down late in that season was how he was handled in April. That was the thing that annoyed me. And there was one specific game that jumped out at me. It was a game at Yankee Stadium in late April, the Mets against the Yankees, and the Mets had a big lead, and Matt Harvey came out to pitch the ninth inning. And this is April off of Tommy John surgery. And at the time, I complained about it, and I remember Beningo saying, well, bro, this is great. And I was like, listen, it's great if this doesn't bite you in the ass in September. If you're just going balls to the wall and you don't care and you're like, screw it, we don't have any restrictions, then fine. But if you're going to have to pay the piper down the road, then it's not worth it. Christian Scott throwing 99 pitches on July 3rd was not worth it. His first start back in the major leagues after you handled him with such care in AAA can't be that to then respond with this. That's my problem. That's problem number one. Problem number two is the choice of who came into the game. You're in a tie game with two outs in the sixth inning. I understand Eric Orsi's on this roster for a reason, like he's going to pitch at some point, but are you really going tie game sixth inning? And look, it wasn't all him. It was mostly him. Adrian Hauser lit the game on fire as well, and a 2-2 game turned into a 7-2 loss. And also, the Mets couldn't hit. Let's point that out. Mitch Keller's a hell of a pitcher. Brandon Nimmo took advantage of a 3-0 pitch. He never swings 3-0. He does. Hits the two-run home run. So it was also about the offense, which has cooled off considerably over the last couple of weeks. But to me, with Christian Scott and with the way this has been handled over the last week, is more think ahead if you're the New York Mets, if you're David Stearns. Put him on the hot seat for this one, too. Carlos Mendoza, because it's an organizational decision. You knew going in, he's only throwing 75 pitches. Okay, why? Ask yourself why he was in that spot. He was in that spot because of regular rest. He was in that spot because he threw 99 pitches. I get that. Well, then maybe you don't allow those two things to happen. Maybe you manage Scott differently. So I know that ticked a lot of people off, as it should. Look, it's also, here's the other aspect of it that's very frustrating. Why is there a number specific to where no matter what's going on in the game, that's the drop-dead number? Like, not all 75 pitches are created equal. No, the Mets made a decision, hey, we really want to keep Christian Scott healthy. We want to handle him with care. He's only going to throw 75 pitches. Well, there is a big difference between 75 pitches over four laborious innings and 75 pitches when you're two outs in the sixth inning and you've just retired a bunch of guys in a row. There's a big difference. And I think to treat it exactly the same and say hard line, he's at 75 and he has to come out, I think is foolish. And I think the way the Mets handled Monday afternoon was foolish. With that said, here's the big picture. This was not a disastrous road trip. This was not a banner road trip. It was a very even keel. You didn't let things spiral out of control. You didn't have an amazing run. It was a very neutral trip to go 4-4. Because whether we want to admit it or not, the Pirates and the Nationals are basically on the Mets level. There are a couple of tiers in the National League. And, you know, the St. Louis Cardinals and the San Diego Padres are trying to prove they're on a higher tier. And they both have played much better. That's why they're both above 500 as wildcard teams. But I think that mesh of a tier all those teams battling for the second and third wild card spots. And for now, we'll include San Diego and St. Louis in that. You know, the Mets, the Pirates, the Nationals, the Diamondbacks, they're all in that mix. So when we talk about the Mets had a soft schedule, which no Met fan wants to hear anymore after what happened in 2022, I wouldn't look at the Pirates and the Nationals as soft. I think the Colorado Rockies are soft. I think the Miami Marlins, when they face them after the break, those are the softies. Those are the teams you better beat. And the Mets haven't done that yet this year. They've struggled against the Miami Marlins. But now that they're home with another series against Washington, where they will get to see their bugaboo, Jake Irvin, again, his first start after that incredibly dominant 4th of July start comes against the Mets at Citi Field. So you hope the Mets make the adjustments and hit him tonight, Tuesday night. But then you've got games with Colorado, and that's why I look at this 6-game homestand, and 5-1 is the look. 5-1 is the goal, but that is now the expectation. If you want to build off of that incredible June, if you want to prove this team is legitimate, if you want to now start to make your move, because look, the Cardinals are winning an awful lot of games. The Padres have even created some room. 500 may not be enough to make the postseason in the National League. And I never thought it would be. You got to make your move at some point. And I think this homestand coming up against Washington and Colorado going into the break, that's the move to make. I think this is really going to be a defining homestand for the New York Mets. I think if we're sitting here and the Mets are still under 500 going into the All-Star break, and do the math on that. Right now, they're one under. If you go 3-3 on this homestand, and you're sitting there a game under 500. I'm not going to bury the Mets, but I think our view of this team will be far different than maybe the view we had during the OMG concert. You go out, you win 4 out of 6. Okay. All right. Can't say that's bad. A game above 500. But 5-1 is the expectation. Win 2 out of 3 against Washington and sweep the Colorado Rockies. That's the hope. That's the belief, and that's the test for this team. Now, before we get to your emails, I was fascinated by something Brandon Nimmo said the other day. And I give Brandon Nimmo credit because Brandon Nimmo is just being honest. Brandon Nimmo, quote, concerning the 4-4 road trip, some games got away from us, but honestly, that's the story of the year so far. We haven't been able to lock down wins all the time, and that's a problem. But we're hoping to address it to get better at it. Now, you can take that quote two ways. You could take that quote as Brandon saying our bullpen needs to be better, or it's Brandon saying, hey, David Stearns, go get us some help. I think we want to take it as, hey, David Stearns, go get us some help. There are two avenues where the Mets can address this bullpen, and they need to. Look, I think you owe this roster. You owe them a little bit. And I think what you owe them is a chance. And that doesn't mean you go out and you do something stupid. It doesn't mean you go out and you trade top prospects. It doesn't mean you go get rentals. It means that you make strategic moves to improve your bullpen. Maybe it's picking up a 34-year-old veteran who's having a good season. Maybe it's trading for a guy who's got more control so that you're not renting a guy for a year, but you're bringing in a reliever that can not only help you this year, but can help you next year and the year after that. Or maybe it's that creative idea we've talked about, which is taking your surplus starting pitching and trading it to a team that's not giving up, that's not selling. They need starting pitching, and they're able to give you a good reliever back. Tanner Scott has 1 year left on his deal. So that is a rental, if I'm not mistaken. Andrew Chafin, lefty reliever, that's a rental. Now, Andrew Chafin ain't going to cost you a lot. Tanner Scott will. Am I willing to give up a big prospect for a guy that I'm losing at the end of the year? Well, I wouldn't say I'm losing at the end of the year, but a guy that I may lose at the end of the year? I'm probably not into that as much. That doesn't excite me as much. Actually, let me double check. I don't know if it's Tanner Scott has 1 year left on his deal or 2 years left on his deal. I do want to have that. He's a free agent next year. Okay, so I'm right. So he has 1 year left on his deal. So that's a rental, unless you re-sign him. I'm not as into a move like that. I would be more into a move where I'm getting a guy, let's say like Jason Foley of Detroit, who's 28 years old, who who's got 3 years of control. So if I bring him in, I'm not just bringing him in for this year, I'm bringing him in for the future. Now, if I'm trading a surplus starter and that's all I'm giving up and I'm not giving up top prospects, then yeah, I'd be more open to it if there's a match that makes sense. But they owe this team, David Stearns does, just going out and getting some arms. It doesn't have to be top of the line arms. I threw out Dylan Floro the other day. Obviously, Washington is still in it, so that doesn't seem like the likeliest scenario, which is part of the problem. You know, if a team is in it and you're not giving them a major league starting pitcher, they're likely not to make the deal. But I certainly took Brandon Nimmo and that quote as a call for help. And yeah, let's get to a lot of your emails. I promise we'd be very interactive on this edition of the Rico. TheRicoB@gmail.com. I apologize. We can't really do voicemails today because we're doing a morning edition. Hoff's on the train, so it's kind of a messed up schedule. But I do promise we'll do that, especially going into the All-Star break. Let's start off with Fred. Fred writes, be consistent. The frustrating part of today's game, he's talking about Monday's game, was how much of the departure it was from Mendy's tendencies to manage on the fly. Severino and Quintana both had starts earlier where the conventional wisdom said take them out. But Mendy went with his gut and what his eyes told him and left both pitchers to steal more outs. So why remove Christian Scott after 77 pitches and two outs in the sixth when you see right in front of you how good he looks? And this coming week after he's left in to throw 99 pitches with a guy on base. He had two outs and the bases were empty. Let him finish the inning. 100% agree. I think that the decision from 5 days ago affected the decision today, and that's not acceptable. You need to know, hey, he's probably going to pitch on 5 days or 4 days rest. He's going to be on normal rest. Maybe I don't push him to throw 99 pitches in this spot on July 3rd, because what's that going to do in his next start? Jimmy writes, I agree with your assessment the other day, whether it be 5-3 or 4-4, they need to come home and cause some damage to these teams. However, after another anemic Mets offensive performance, I look at their record since May 30th, the beginning of the Arizona series, they're 22-12. In 18 of those 22 wins, they scored five or more runs. In 13 of the 22 wins, they scored seven or more runs. That is crazy. And in half of those 18 wins, they scored nine or more runs. In contrast, in six of their 12 losses, they scored three runs or less, five of them two or less. What we've seen since the accountability meeting is the winning formula Stearns put together. An offensive team who hopefully has enough pitching to keep us in games. Whether it matters if a team loses 3-2, 7-2, or 14-2, it's a nuanced debate, but it's clear that this team wins when it hits and loses when it doesn't. And pitching has rarely helped this 2024 campaign. We're weeks away from the trade deadline, so I don't want to delve deep into who's available and who to target. Obviously, we need arms, but considering he cannot overhaul a bullpen with more holes than a block of Swiss cheese, how likely do you think it would be for Stearns to target a bat in the outfield if Marte doesn't make much progress over the next couple of weeks? The current options are Tyrod Taylor. I'm in football mode. Tyrone Taylor, Jeff McNeil, Ben Gamel, and DJ Stewart. I'm counting on at least three of those names to not be on the roster at the deadline, Jimmy. So I said this to Hoff when Hoff brought up the idea of, hey, could they use an upgrade at backup catcher, which I think so far we're all pretty good with Luis Torrens. But my answer to him is similar to the idea of adding an outfielder, which is I'm not against it. Of course, the Mets could get better by adding an outfielder. And that's assuming that maybe the reports on on Starling Marte are not good. Maybe Starling Marte is not walking through that door before August 1st. And if there is legitimate concern that he's not coming back and you look at your internal options, which as of right now, barring you make some kind of move with Brett Beatty or Luis Angel Acuña, which you can with Acuña, by the way, you certainly can. But your options are DJ Stewart, Jeff McNeil, Ben Gamel, Tyrone Taylor. It's not great. So if you can get an outfield upgrade, I wouldn't be against it. I told you who they should get. They should get Jesse Winker so we don't have to face that bastard. I would acquire him just so we don't have to deal with him. But again, Washington probably not quite selling as of yet. No, I don't think it's a bad idea. I just don't think it's the priority. My priority, if I'm David Stearns, where I'm looking at this trade deadline, where I'm sort of in it, I'm around. I'm within striking distance. But the Mets are a 500 team. Look, I believe in sample size. And while they had a great June and they played like a great team in June, nobody believes they're that good. Just like I don't think most sane people believe they were that bad to the way they played in May. The truth is they're probably a 500 team. Now, a 500 team keeps you within striking distance in all likelihood. So I think what that puts you in this new world of do you buy, do you sell, what do? I think it puts you in this situation where you strategically buy. You don't do it irresponsibly. And right now, I would be fine adding a bullpen arm or two and leaving the outfield as is. Doesn't mean the outfield is perfect. Doesn't mean they couldn't use an upgrade. But I would prioritize adding an arm or two. As far as fixing the entire pen is concerned, look, you're not fixing the entire pen. A part of the pen's success will rely on some of the guys that are here. Like Edwin Diaz needs to be a lockdown closer. Dednell Nunez and Reed Garrett are now being relied upon. Jake Diekman, every once in a while, is going to have to get some lefties out. So you're going to need some internal help. But adding an arm or two, I think, should absolutely be the priority. Mike writes, Evan and Pete, your podcast now comes up before every other video in my feed because I'm a huge fan. Well, we appreciate that, Mike. Thank you very much. I was following the game on Sunday in the car. I don't know what was making me more nervous, my 16-year-old driving or watching Mendy's pitching moves. I didn't know if Nunez was hurt or wild, but what I thought is it was idiotic to go to Diaz for four outs. I know you'd agree and talk about that. Thankfully, after the grief we endured, we had a great comeback and Diaz got the win. Not going to lie, I'm now terrified of the Nats' young hitters and pitchers. Jesse effing Winker is coming to City. Yikes. Great work. Yeah, I'm not against using Diaz for four out saves. What I didn't like was I thought that Dednell Nunez had earned, especially the way he had pitched so far this season, the chance to get out of that inning. He had just struck out the Pirates' best hitter in Brian Reynolds. And I didn't look at it as, well, he's emotionally drained now. I looked at it as, hey, he deserves a chance to finish the story, if you will. Leon writes, the bullpen ERA is 11.00 the last 2 weeks. It's amazing they've managed to play 500 ball during that time. Is that true? Is the bullpen ERA 11 over the last 2 weeks? Now, in fairness, they all count. But if you go back to the Friday game against Pittsburgh, when a game that was reasonably close turned into an absolute blowout, and then eventually Luis Torrens is coming into pitch, does it really matter? Like, I know that counts on your bullpen ERA, but does it really matter? All right, here's Trevor, the sixth inning decision, as we've talked about. I love the podcast. I'm sure you spent a while screaming at Mendy for the decision to take Scott out. I did. And which I agree in a perfect world was the wrong choice. But in today's era, this is not his decision and is likely coming from the front office. And pretty much every team would handle the situation similarly. I agree. It's a shitty ways to lose a game, although the offense didn't look fantastic either. But this is the nature of today's MLB. I don't think this is fair to place all the blame on Mendy and rather on today's MLB and the handling of rookie pitchers as a whole. The bigger question I have with Mendy is why Orzy? All right, Trevor, a couple of things. I agree with you, why Orzy? I have made very clear on the pod today I am blaming the front office as well. It is not strictly on Carlos Mendoza. But here's where I'll disagree about this is an MLB thing. Let's use the Yankees as an example, if you don't mind. Let's use Luis Gil as an example, if you don't mind. Luis Gil is the epitome of a guy that would probably need a strict innings limit because Luis Gil has barely pitched, literally has barely pitched in his career. He had never in his major league professional career, so I take major league out, his minor league career included, the most innings he's ever thrown was 96 innings in 2019. 5 years ago, by the way. In 2023, that's last year, he threw four innings. Four. Because he was coming off of Tommy John surgery. A year before that, in 2021, he threw 79 innings. Luis Gil has already thrown 96 in the third innings. He has already thrown more innings than he has in his professional career. The Yankees... And by the way, you can rip him for this. I get it. Luis Gil has been struggling until his most recent start.
but Luis Gil has not been put on some crazy innings limit or pitch count limit to the point where some Yankee fans, I disagree with them, were upset that he stayed in the game the other day and gave up that home run to Rafael Devers. His pitch count was in the 90s. Now, in comparison, let's go to Christian Scott. Last year, Christian Scott, 2023, threw 87 innings. 87. Right now, he has at, let's see where he's at right now. He's at 81. So he's a little bit less than where he eventually got to last year. Luis Gil threw 3 innings last year. So I'm not arguing that the Yankees are the right ones and we've got to follow their lead, but you wrote this is an MLB thing. Is it, though? Like, I think teams make case-by-case decisions on how they want to handle young pitching, and don't take this as screw Christian Scott, just let him pitch. I'm not even saying that. I'm saying be strategic with how you do it. I've always thought the Mets should have a 6-man rotation. They have enough arms to have a 6-man rotation. As much as we bitched about Tyler McGill, it's okay if he's still in the rotation pitching every once every 6 days. It's okay if Joey Lucchesi's up here. It's okay if Jose Budo's up here, even though Budo has now become a key arm in the bullpen, which may be the reason why they don't want to use him in the rotation. So I don't necessarily think it's just a baseball thing. Negative Dan wants to apologize, and I appreciate that. I brought up Negative Dan the other day because he said the Mets salvaged by winning on Sunday. Meanwhile, they had won Saturday and Sunday. I didn't think that the term was correct. So Dan writes, LMAO. I think that means laughing my ass off. No, I know that's what it means. I didn't mean to rile you up with the salvage talk. And you were right that that was definitely not the word to use. I was more meaning it in a way where it seems like on Sundays, this team finds ways to save themselves and pull wins out of their asses. And yes, I will acknowledge leadoff Lindor. The guy has been phenomenal since being moved up, looking like a completely different player. And it's so obvious he should have been in that spot since the day he got here. He's not trying to be Barry Bonds anymore, actually taking control that bat, which seems to be leading to the consistency he has always been missing. Let's hope this lasts. Lastly, 4-4 against the peer tier. I know it was on the road, but as we know, they are better on the road, and specifically this offense, who we've been lauding, rightfully so, turn themselves around by making their calling card mashing on the road. And not only that, but mashing good pitchers. Well, in the last 5 games, they've scored 12 runs while getting shut out in one of them. Even in the first 2 wins in Washington, they did 90% of their scoring in the 10th inning of both games. And those good pitchers they've been mashing went back to shutting them down. They are obviously head and shoulders better than earlier this year, but as much crap as we give the pen and the starters, this offense should not be held beyond reproach. That's a great email, Dan. I agree with a lot of what you said. This offense has cooled off. I don't think there's any doubt. And that was bound to happen. I mean, the Mets throughout the month of June were scoring like 6 runs a game. That was not going to last. Now, you mentioned, and you're right, that this has been a different team at home. It's got to stop. This is why this homestand is so important. It has to stop. You can't be a playoff team and be a sub-500 home team. You can't be a playoff team and come home and score 3 runs a game. The Mets need to click at home. And it looked like they were starting to a couple of weeks ago when they mashed the Yankees, when they mashed the Astros. Think about it. They're 3-0 against the Yankees and the Astros, scoring a crap ton of runs. 9, 14, and 7. That's the amount of runs they scored in the first 3 games of that homestand against the Yankees and the Astros. And then the bullpen blew Saturday. And Sunday was a kick in the you-know-what kind of loss. I think these games are so freaking important because I think they're defining of what this team is. Ask yourself this question as a Met fan, positive Met fan, negative Met fan, somewhere in the middle. And I think most of us are somewhere in the middle. What is this team? Look, we all fall victim to reacting in the moment. I try so hard not to. I've tried all year not to. When things were bad, I'd be pissed, but I would take a step back and say, look, they're not this bad. And then sometimes you get to your limit, and it's so difficult to fight through that. Then when they're good, you try to say, yeah, this is great. They're not this good. That's even more difficult to do because everyone gets so excited. The players are so excited. They're having concerts on the field, and it's very difficult to not pour cold water on it, but just remind people, hey, this is baseball. They're not this good. I think now, with a stretch of games where they are 4-6 in their last 10, or 4-4 on this road trip, however you want to define it, not horrible, not collapsing, but also not dominant, like kind of treading water. I think this is an easier time to give an honest opinion on what this team is. I do, because the emotions of sucking aren't clouding you, and the emotions of winning every single night aren't clouding you. So I will give you my answer. And then obviously you chime in as well, therico@gmail.com, or call our radio show. We talked plenty of Mets yesterday on Evan and Tiki. We'll be doing a little bit of it today, 2:00 on the Fan. I think they are a slightly above 500 team, which is kind of what I thought at the beginning of the season. So a little bit better than maybe what most critics thought or some Met fans thought. But that's what I think they are, a slightly above 500 team. Now, right now, they're a slightly under 500 team because they are one game under 500 as we are more than halfway through the season. But what are they? Are they better than that? Are they worse than that? I think these six games, and I hate to like take games in the middle of July and make them more than what they are, but in my opinion, they are pretty big. They're big for a myriad of reasons. They're big because A, this team needs to finally prove they can win some freaking home games. B, they need to get above 500 and stay there. You're going to be a playoff team. You're going to be in a playoff race. Get above that line and stay there. You're facing teams you should beat, really a team you should beat in Colorado and a team in Washington that you're a little bit better than. I wouldn't say you're a lot better than them. You're a little bit better than them. I also think as we get closer and closer to the trade deadline, it is July 9th. The trade deadline is July 30th. Do the math. That's 3 weeks from today. And oh, by the way, next week, there are basically no games with the Derby, the All-Star game, the All-Star break. You've got six games. And then you don't start playing baseball again until what, July 19th? Now you're 11 days ahead of the trade deadline. These are really important in convincing David Stearns what to do. I'll tell you a story, and y'all know this story. I'm not breaking any news here. Sandy Alderson was on the fence in 2015. Didn't know what to do. I was at a season ticket event the following year, and Sandy Alderson was honest and open and said, I thought we should sell. He said it. He said his underlings were the ones that had to convince him, hey, maybe we should go for it. You know, maybe we are pretty good. Maybe we should give this team a chance. Because if, let's not forget where the Mets were in the middle of 2015. That was a very awkward year because they had that great April, and then they were very mediocre in May, June, and the early part of July. Let me pull this up and see exactly where they were. After they lost to San Diego, the infamous in the rain game, the San Diego, the day before they got Yoenis, they were 52-50. Two games above 500. Now, granted, they were only three games out of first place, which is the real reason why you couldn't sell. And maybe that's the similarities to now. You know, the Mets are a game under 500. They're 2.5 games out. So it is kind of similar, but they were on the fence. Do we buy? Do we sell? What do we do? Now, it is different because I wouldn't do anything as aggressive as they did in 2015, like I pointed out. I would, again, do more strategic buying. But if the Mets go 1-5 on this homestand, I know that sounds horrible, but let's say they did. They went 1-5 on this homestand, and now all of a sudden they're five games under 500 going into the All-Star break. Anybody think they're buying anything? They're not. In any case, they'd sell, especially if St. Louis and San Diego continue to play well, and you go 1-5, and now you're five or six games out of a wild card spot. They're selling. Now, all of a sudden, we're having a far different discussion. We may even be talking about Pete Alonso being traded away. That'd be on the table. That's how important this homestand is. That's how damn important these next six games are. In fact, they're so important that I'm going to tonight's game, Tuesday night's game, and why not whip out a drive home podcast? So we'll do a little drive home. It's a double Rico. It's a day-night doubleheader Rico Bronya. A morning edition and a night edition. So I look forward to that. I apologize to all the emails we could not get to, But now I have to go. I got to take my dog to the vet. In fact, I'm running very late, but I thought it was important to give you a little Rico. So thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. After tonight's game, figure about 5 minutes after it's over, you'll get yourself a drive home Rico Bronya. Good night, and let's go, Mets.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allowed 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
It's time for Pitch Hit and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Give the kids in your community a chance to flex their superpowers, and they could earn a trip to the national finals of the 2025 World Series presented by Capital One. So go ahead, be the one who powers their dreams, and sign up to host the local Pitch Hit and Run event. It's a free and fun way to promote baseball, softball, and your organization. To learn more, go to pitchhitrun.com.